If you believe the self-help section of your bookstore or library, clutter is a bad word. But don't tell that to the crafters who are digging through heaping piles of all that stuff you're patting yourself on the back for finally getting rid of at a new shop in the West Bottoms. Those castaways are like treasures. We sent our intern, Tom Taylor, to check it out.
When you walk into an old brick building down by the 12th Street Bridge, the first thing you see is the word scraps in bright pink lights. The sign directs you up a flight of stairs. At the top is Scraps KC, and there's stuff everywhere. Stacks of boxes in all shapes and sizes, fabric scraps covering an entire wall, plastic tubs overflowing with random objects like foam animal cutouts, empty CD cases, old magazines.
Oh, there's anything and everything you'd ever want to do anything with.
That's Peggy. She's a shopper here and a crafter extraordinaire. Scraps is made for people like her. They call it a creative reuse center. It's like a thrift store just for crafters who might have some use for the stuff you want to get rid of, like your kids' old toys, or the remnants of your attempts at scrapbooking. Ty O'Toole, her husband, was an art major at UMKC.
I would say if you have just a little bit of creativity in you and you come here, be prepared to walk out with a sack full.
Peggy's perusing old editions of National Geographic.
I'm a paper addict. Anything that has to do with paper, I love. Magazines, books, scrap paper, graph paper, wallpaper.
Up to 1,000 pounds of stuff gets donated each week. To find what's behind it all, literally I climbed over piles of donated clothes to talk with Executive Director Brenda Mott in her office. Growing up, she had to use her imagination to turn what she had into something fun.
When we were little, if we wanted to build a fort outside, because we were always outside, we would run into somebody's dad's garage and pull out the wood from that. Or we'd be in the empty lot and find sticks. Or mom had some fabric at home that we would take and use as kind of the covering of the fort.
Brenda started shopping at a place like Scraps in college in Massachusetts. And after years spent repurposing things as a teacher and a parent, she finally brought the idea to Kansas City. One of her favorite parts of the store is a make and take space, where anyone can come in and grab a handful of stuff and make something only they can imagine. She likes to hang up leftover projects like what's been dubbed the Ghostbuster suit, made out of an apple slicer, a mask, and the motherboard of a computer.
And the kids just are in awe of it, especially the younger ones, because they never think, I could make something like that.
That was Brenda Mott showing our intern Tom Taylor around Scraps KC in the West Bottoms. I'm Gina Kaufman, and yeah, you can make stuff like that out of other stuff that you've just got lying around. Something to think about as you head over to relatives' houses for the holidays, which means confronting all kinds of stuff. From old school projects your parents have been hanging on to for decades to stacks of magazines piled dangerously high in your aunt's garage. And what about your uncle's old pipes and pipe cleaners? Call 816-235-2888 to tell us the story behind your stuff. How much do you hold on to? What's the weirdest thing you've held on to? What role does it fill in your life? 816-235-2888. I have two guests in the studio this morning, and they have very different takes on the subject. I'm going to start by talking with Eliza Cantley. She's a professional organizer, so people hire her when they are so overwhelmed by their stuff that they need help. Hi, Eliza.
Hey.
So we've just heard a rousing affirmation of stuff from the shoppers at Scraps KC, but what's the other side of that coin?
Well, I guess I could, you want me to talk about minimalism?
I'd like you to talk about stuff.
And
its dark side.
Well, I personally, I have not been a minimalist my whole life, but I was very organized. That's how I became an organizer. And I think I started to get, I would come away from working with my clients with kind of a heavy feeling. And it really, I think, you know, just working in stuff all day, it's all about the stuff. And I would come home and it would make me look at my own things and realize I was kind of bogged down by my stuff too. So I kind of became more simplified in that regard. I think our things can bog us down quite a bit. I've become a minimalist just because I realized, you know, I wasn't getting out as much as I wanted to. I couldn't move as quickly as I wanted to. I feel that things can hold us back from more authentic connections with others.
Can you explain how that works? I mean, tell me about maybe a time when you could not get yourself out of the door and it was stuff holding you back.
Yeah. I used to kind of over-organize things. So I can remember one time, you know, I was living in Washington, D.C., and my friends really wanted to go to this music festival. And I was like, I can't go. I have to clean my apartment. You know, my boyfriend's coming and everything has to look really good. And so I would, you know, I sat down and just like organized, like instead of just putting things into basic piles, I was just like getting out the label maker and just kind of overdoing
it. The label maker.
The label maker. Yeah.
So you had to not only organize your stuff, you had to label your stuff.
Yeah, I was being kind of a perfectionist about it.
How do you see your clients getting bogged down by stuff? I mean, what kind of stuff is bogging people down and what are some of the different forms that takes?
I think, okay, so some examples. I've seen, you know, really cluttered home offices when people can't kind of get their business up off the ground and running, or they can't pay bills because there are just stacks of paper everywhere. I've seen people be chronically late to work and to events because they can't find what they need in their closets. And I also think there's a huge correlation between, you know, struggling with healthy eating because the pantry is completely disorganized, or overbuying and wasting that money because people aren't sure of what they have.
So there's new stuff you use, and that seems like the kind of stuff you're talking about. What about old stuff? The kind of stuff that people maybe finally get around to giving to that Scraps KC place one day. Stuff that's just been lying there for a long time. Why do people have old stuff?
You know, I have noticed over these past 7 years of doing what I do that there are kind of like six reasons as to why we hold on to things for too long. But I think potential is a big one. I think, you know, like for example, with National Geographic magazines, I think people think that there's going to be some value, or Beanie Babies. Remember when those peaked and they were worth a lot of money and now they're not worth a lot
anymore. Oh, so financial
anymore.
Potential, not like I'm going to do something with this someday.
Right. Like they can do something with it. They can sell it. They can pass it on to a relative. I think potential is a huge reason, or investment as well. Like I spent a lot of money on this. It's going to be worth something, but it's not quite worth what it should be yet. So I'm going to wait. Those are big reasons I see.
So potential is, you said there are six reasons.
Six. So potential and investment, too, we kind of touched on. So those are two. I think one I've really struggled with personally is control. And so what that looks like for me is I might have a shirt that I'm okay with never seeing again, and I'm about to put it in the donate bag. But I think, wait a minute, where is this shirt going to go? You know, it's going to go to Savers, but who's going to buy it at Savers? And are they going to use and appreciate the shirt as much as I did? Or is it going to go to the back of their closet? And so I've kind of had to teach myself this affirmation of wherever this item goes is none of my business. So that is how I have personally dealt with control. Another aspect of control and perfectionism is we don't like to start the organizing project until we have absolutely everything we need and everything stacks up. And of course,
so you need stuff to help you get rid of your stuff or perhaps organize it?
I think a lot of people feel that way. Yeah. So they're waiting for that perfect circumstance. The fourth one I like to talk about is identity and how we can use our things to convey messages to other people and to ourselves about who we are. So we've all sat behind that person in traffic who's got the bumper stickers slathered all over the back of the car. And after sitting behind them for 30 seconds, you're totally clear on all their political views and how many cats they own. So that's an example.
And whether they like world peas.
Well, yeah, whether they like world peas. Exactly. And, you know, like, It's okay to have some Royals shirts if you love the Kansas City Royals. But if, you know, the Royals section of your closet is taking up most of the space, that's when it kind of becomes an identity problem. And people feel like they need to own all the things to prove that they are the biggest fan. So, again, we're using our stuff to convey a message about who we are.
But what – so why – I guess – that could be a problem for some people, but for someone else, is the problem that they have all those shirts, all those royal shirts, for example, or is the problem that they're just shoved in the closet being in the way? Because what if they were somehow displayed in a meaningful way? Would that be different?
That would totally be different, yeah. I think clutter is, you know, anything that holds us back from a happy life. And if people are going to every Royals games and they're really using those shirts, or if they're displaying them in a meaningful way, then I don't think it's clutter at all. But you're right, when it goes to the back of the closet and if it's taking up space from other valuable everyday items.
But what if it's going to the back of the closet to be given to your children someday, and then they will be like, oh my God, like, all of these Royals seasons, I remember them. I was at those games too. What about that?
I think it's definitely worth having a conversation with your kids to first see if that's as interesting to them as it is to their parents. And if it is, then that's okay. And you'd stick them in a bin and label it. Labeling's very important. And put it up in the attic, and that way it's out of the way.
You seem kind of obsessed with labeling, I've got to say.
I know. Labeling's good.
All right. I want to understand. You say that you are now a minimalist, and you've defined clutter as anything that is getting in the way of your living, like, the best life you can live or holding you back.
Yeah.
What is the definition of minimalism?
I think minimalism, first of all, it's going to be different for everyone. So I think the overall definition is subtracting your way to what makes you happy. So if you have a house full of stuff and you're actively using all that stuff, and it's not just collecting dust, then, hey, that's your minimalism if you're really using it all. For me, it means living in a tiny bedroom with, you know, enough clothes to get me through the week. I do my laundry several times a week. I like doing laundry. And, you know, the only hobby I do that really requires stuff is scuba diving, which, you know, takes up a very small section of my closet.
And you actually scuba dive and do not just fantasize about it while accumulating equipment?
No, I go once a year.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
Okay, I want to run some scenarios by you because I think that the way this plays out in real life can be a little bit less clear than what you've just described, because it sounds like using stuff is what makes it worthwhile to you. But, okay, I once had a boyfriend who saved everything, and I did not agree with this policy, but it did seem to work for him. He grew up in a family of collectors, and he was also just, I don't know, I don't know if this is a word, but maybe acquisitive. He really liked stuff, and I was one time trying to declutter the apartment, and I made a pile of things I thought either one of us might get rid of. And two items I remember from this pile were a really old crumbling brick and a broken toaster oven. And it turns out that the brick was from a driveway at like his grandpa's house or something, and the toaster was the first toaster oven he ever had. He was really scandalized that I wanted to get rid of these things, but he actually did have a pretty profound sentimental attachment to these things, mm-hmm. whereas that's hard for me to understand. I don't care about old toasters.
Right. So, you know, I do see this thing happen pretty often. I think what helps a lot of people is taking a photo of the item. And, you know, and then you get into that slippery slope of, well, is your tech organized enough so that you can find that digital photo again if you need to? But
also, is a facsimile of the thing the same as the thing? For this person, he had carried from childhood a brick from his grandpa's driveway to every apartment he lived in. And then one day, this lady he's living with is like, could you just, like, get rid of this brick? This is a broken, crumbling old brick.
Right. It's a weird thing about our culture, how we externalize things that are meaningful to us. And wouldn't it be interesting if we all figured out what that essence was about the item we're keeping and tried to internalize that? Maybe it's telling someone a story about it, writing something down, you know, having a funeral for it before donating it. But that is so, it's so interesting to me that we tend to externalize as our first instinct in our culture.
There's also, I mean, I think there is something about objects that belonged to people we have lost, mm-hmm. and that sort of can become a stand-in. And I understand that there's probably a time and a place to get rid of things, but there might also be a time and a place to hold on to them. And, you know, for example, I lost my dad when I was pretty young, and for a while I hung on to every single thing that was connected to him in any way, like if it had his handwriting on it, if he gave it to me, if I remember even talking to him about it. A couple of his sweaters that did not fit me by any stretch of the imagination. I was eventually able to let things go, but that took time. And I would say that was probably a phase I needed to go through. And if someone had stepped in and been like, this place is a mess, what are those giant sweaters doing here? I would have been like, I need those. And I would have been right.
Right. Yeah. Those are tough. And having lost my mom when I was 16, I can completely relate to that. And it has taken me years to kind of pare down and pare down and pare down because I was her only daughter. So I inherited all of the, you know, most of the things of her very feminine things that my brother wasn't really interested in. And so, that was tough. I think what really helped me was thinking, you know what, if I have some representative items that really resonate with me, that fit me, that I love to display, then it kind of gives me this big permission to let the stuff go that doesn't really, that doesn't feel like me. And what else is interesting is I ended up having some amazing jewelry that she gave me stolen. And that was a little bit devastating. And so it inspired me to write a blog post, 12 non-things I inherited from my mom, like things that can never be broken or lost.
That's really beautiful.
Thanks. Yeah. So like things like how I do my signature on forms and the way I talk to my dog and my love for cooking and my love for traveling and languages. And that just writing that was really therapeutic for me. And so I know
just
that
a reminder that this is material, like materially, maybe everything you had, but it's not everything you had.
Right. Right.
I mean, this gets at our relationship with stuff in general, right? These are, we are trained in a consumer culture from a really young age to place enormous value on stuff. And minimalism, I feel like, asks people on some level to undo that programming.
Right. Also, I think minimalism challenges the ego because I think the ego has a lot to do with why we keep things and also why we encourage and really pressure our children. And
can you explain that a little more?
Yeah, I think sometimes parents feel like if their kids don't want to inherit that, you know, china set or that piece of furniture, I think parents take it very personally. It's almost like the children are rejecting them in a sense. And I'm not quite sure where that comes from. I think the Depression era probably plays a role in that when things were so important, when it was so important to keep things. And so that mentality has been passed down through the generations.
When we return, we are going to hear from a costume designer who embraces her own stuff and other people's stuff. And we'd like to hear from you too at 816-235-2888. The thing you held on to, the thing you finally got rid of, your relationship with stuff. 816-235-2888. We're back. I'm Gina Kaufman. This is KCUR's Central Standard, and we're talking about your stuff. And not like when it's all put away because you know people are coming over. Your stuff in its natural state. Are you enjoying that stuff? Does it mean something to you? Or is it totally in your way? 816-235-2888. We especially want to hear from you if you have ever had a stuff epiphany. 816-235-2888. I've been talking with professional organizer Eliza Cantley, and now I want to talk to Mary Traylor. She's the costume designer for the Lyric Opera. Hi, Mary.
Hello.
So tell me about your relationship with stuff.
Well, clutter is my life sometimes, it would seem. I enjoy the visual stimulation of a lot of stuff.
Having it out, not put away.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And use it. But it gives me so much visual stimulation. The walls of two of my rooms in my house are covered with old Bollywood costume fabric that's been made into kind of quilted fabric, and the walls are completely covered with that. And I can sit there, and every time it's like living inside a kaleidoscope because you see all of this.
Do you think that helps you either be happy or work? What can you
Well, it stimulates my vision. It helps me when I'm thinking I need a color palette, whatever. And I have a lot of objects in my house.
Tell me about an object that is in your house that you think a professional organizer might urge you to get rid of, but that you love.
I love. My husband gave me a set of stuffed wolverines. And they're old and a little bit funky, and they're huge, and I adore them. And so
you say huge, how big?
The size of a small bear.
Okay.
Okay. And people come in and they go, "Oh my God," because they're a little moth-eaten. But
where are they?
They're in one of my bedrooms.
One of your bedrooms.
Right.
So you have to have a large space to love stuff as much as you do.
Oh, absolutely. I have a huge house. And you know, in this bed, like I said, there's the kaleidoscope on the walls. There's the wolverines in the corner. There's a very ornate Chinese wedding bed. And so it's just like a kind of a total potpourri of objects.
Is any of it random, or have you been really deliberate about what stuff you have, why, where it's going to go?
Some of it's random. One of my favorite places in the whole world was the Victoria and Albert Museum in London. I'm sure that's been updated and cleaned up a little bit, but it was like stepping into an incredible cabinet of curiosities. You'd see a samurai suit in one corner and turn around and see a stuffed dodo. And that kind of eclectic aesthetic appeals to me because it's very stimulating to my personal creative process.
Do you see a danger in our current cultural trend toward stripping down and simplifying? Do you think that there's a danger that there's something that you personally find useful in stuff, but do you think that society has a use for material objects for not letting them go?
I don't know that it's necessarily the idea of the material value. Because like I said, I look at it from a purely visual aesthetic more than I want this because it's very valuable.
I was saying value as not necessarily monetary value, but this means something to us.
Right. And I in the third floor of my house, there are some beat up old chests that my great-great-grandfather immigrated to America with these chests, and I've hauled them around forever, and now they're back in the house that my great-grandfather built. So there is a huge kind of sentimental, emotional attachment to that aspect. So I guess I'm kind of a sentimental slob about some things. And it's kind of interesting. One of the things that I do own is the bill of sale from their home in Wales before they moved here, where they had to get rid of a lot of stuff that didn't fit in these two crates, they're chests, they're big wooden chests. So there's that, but mainly it's because I enjoy just being surrounded by these objects visually.
You know, I want to bring our organizer back in on this. What would you say, Eliza, about just the idea that when we see so much value in being, for example, like really mobile, like you can get out the door fast and all of that stuff, is there also something that we might be sacrificing in terms of, I don't know, maybe when we talk about the ills of clutter, we are just people who are becoming less sentimental, people who are less connected to the past, people who are less appreciative of some of the subtler benefits of stuff like aesthetic stimulation.
Right. I mean, I almost see it as two different things because what Mary's describing doesn't sound like clutter to me at all. I mean, I think she walks into her home and it sounds like she feels joy based on, you know, this colorful surroundings this atmosphere that she's created for herself. I think where we get into trouble with clutter is, you know, if it's holding us back from doing something, which Mary isn't describing at all. And so are you asking, like, what if somebody values this aesthetic being surrounded by color and if they also want this free mobile life?
I'm really asking about just maybe our changing values as a society. And are we starting to value our individual mobility and our personal agendas over the stuff that connects us perhaps to other people? I mean, I agree with this idea that it's just stuff and my relationship with people doesn't rely on it. On the other hand, I visited my husband's aunt and uncle in Illinois and saw the newspaper articles that were celebrating his grandmother, who I never met. And if that aunt and uncle hadn't held on to that stuff, I, as the new member of this family, would have never seen it. Never, ever.
I think that kind of stuff is pretty cool. And also, it's a newspaper, so it's not really taking up any space.
Let's hear from some of our callers. We want to hear from you at 816-235-2888. Let's hear from Ian in Leawood. Hi, Ian.
Hi. I'm just sort of curious how your guests think about all the gifts you get for Christmas, coming from only one of two kids with three aunts, and they have no kids of their own and stuff like that. So got a lot of stuff from over the years.
And so I guess, can you give me an example of something that you feel conflicted about that was a Christmas gift? I know that it's possible your relatives can hear this, but I'm sure they don't recognize it, your voice. They don't know who you are.
Just as a general example, it's like I've gone into business myself, and I've just gotten over the years so many stocking stuffers that are like little things that can go on a desk that would clutter up that desk over time. But until I get that special desk for it, it's just shoved aside in the drawer, or little silly things or more professional things.
I mean, it does seem like the holidays are kind of an extreme version of a problem a lot of us deal with all the time, which is this constant influx of stuff that happens seemingly effortlessly for a lot of us and not maybe an equivalent pipeline going the other direction. I'll start with you, Eliza. I mean, what do you encounter this a lot with people, but it was a gift?
Sure. Yeah, I mean, Christmas gifts are a tough one. I always say if you can declutter a little before the holidays to make room for the gifts, that's a good idea. But I also heard Ian mention that he's buying supplies for a desk that he doesn't have yet. So my advice would be start with the desk. And then, because you never know, is it going to be a desk with multiple drawers? If so, drawer organizers are good. But if it has no drawers, don't get those. Definitely start with the desk you like and build from there.
So maybe Ian's real problem is not the gift accumulation, but that he has a project he's been putting off.
Right. I mean, that's almost going back to the perfectionism point I made of we're not going to start the project until we have absolutely everything we need, and then we don't really start. Start with that desk.
Okay. And what are your thoughts about this, Mary? I mean, do you think that the accumulation of gifts that you have gotten over the years, I mean, even as someone who likes things, there have to be gifts where you're like, there's just nothing I can do with this.
I figure out a way to repurpose them. I've gotten some pretty hideous jewelry over the years, and it's gotten torn apart and turned into crowns or ornaments on costumes and that sort of thing. It is a tough one to know what to do with something that somebody has put a lot of time, possibly, and thought into giving to you, and then you kind of go, oh my goodness, what is this? And I have one particularly hideous candy jar that was given to me years
ago. But is it like so bad it's good?
It's so bad it has become good.
How? What did you do?
Well, I fill it with really special candies for my granddaughters. And, you know, it's a visual signal to them, oh boy, you know, this is full, let's have a good time. And I just sort of had to learn to live with it.
Let's talk to Larry in Overland Park. Hi, Larry.
Hello.
What do you want to share?
Well, I'm an artist, and I work with found objects. And so So you can imagine I have boxes of everything from shards of broken glass to interesting rocks that I've picked up.
What makes a rock interesting, just real quick?
Color, texture, shape.
You just know an interesting rock when you see it?
Right, and okay. I'm working with pieces of sculpture now using some of the rocks that I've picked up. But what I do is I made a New Year's resolution a couple of years ago that I'm going to throw one thing away a day. And so far it's worked really great. It's amazing. You know, 365 things in a year, and it could be a box of stuff or it could be one item.
Does junk mail count?
No.
Okay.
Recycled junk mail.
So it has to be something that was already there.
Right.
What is something that you got rid of that you hesitated, but it felt really good when you did it?
I had a box full of spindles from doggy poop bags.
What?
I know what he's talking about.
They're little plastic bags, and they're wrapped around a plastic spindle.
Okay.
And so I had a box of those, and I finally decided that I'm never going to incorporate those in anything, and I got rid of them. So, but it was a box of probably 60.
Did the process of going through the stuff remind you of something, and then, like, you were like, yeah, I'm going to use this, and you did it?
Right. It really does. Like the box of glass that I had, still have pieces of it, were shards from a broken skylight that a tree limb fell through. And they were really unique. They were like soda straws in length, and so I incorporated those into a piece of sculpture.
Well, you know, Larry, thank you so much. What I love about Larry's call is that sometimes when you have a ton of stuff, you forget what you have, and it becomes useless just due to sheer quantity. And it sounds like the process of going through it has helped him reunite with some of the stuff, in addition to getting rid of others of the stuff.
Yeah, it's pretty cool.
Mary, do you go through sort of processes like this?
I have boxes and boxes of fabric and things like that. And I do go through it and go, oh, and from time to time get rid of things that way. But usually I kind of sort it a little bit into this can be this, or this can go into a costume, or this is utterly useless, but I just kind of like the way it looks. And that sometimes goes in the save pile.
Let's hear from Spencer. Spencer's calling from downtown Kansas City. Hi, Spencer.
Hi, how are you doing?
Good. How about you?
Pretty good. Pretty good. This is an interesting conversation.
Thanks. What's your deal with stuff? What's it making you think about?
My partner and I moved to a newly renovated high-rise apartment in downtown Kansas City about a year ago. And when we moved down here, it felt like we didn't really have a clutter problem. Everything had a home. Everything was great. But a year later, a year out, you know, we had to get an additional storage unit in the basement. And it goes to something that was said earlier. The influx of stuff that comes in doesn't have an equivalent output. And it's something that has really made Sam, my partner, and I consider moving to the suburbs, which I know we discussed last week. But it's
like you almost just stressed. Need a basement?
Well, our building has a basement that you can rent storage units in, and we bought an additional storage unit just to accommodate the additional stuff that had been accumulated.
So would you prefer otherwise to live downtown, but you are considering moving to the suburbs and changing your entire lifestyle just so that you can have some place for your stuff to go in like a house?
Well, a little bit, as weird as that is to admit. I think that it is under-recognized the amount that like clutter can cause just day-to-day stress. And even though I feel like it would probably just defer the problem for a certain amount of time, it would be nice to make sure that I have enough space so that everything can have a home.
Okay, we're going to get our professional organizer's take on your problem, okay, Spencer?
Stay in the city, Spencer. Stay out of the suburbs.
I can relate to what he's saying. If you live in smaller spaces, you can get the delusion that with more space, your problem would be solved. You'd have that extra room where you put things, more cabinet space or something. And from the outside, I can understand that does sound incorrect and illogical, but I've had thoughts like that too.
I think before you ask about the stuff, I think the important question for Spencer to ask is, if I'm not thinking about my abode and the stuff in it, where do I want to live? When I walk outside of my home, where do I want to be? I mean, if he loves living in downtown, if he just feels that energy from the city, then I think the sacrifice just has to be made with the stuff. I mean, maybe a small storage unit. I mean, I don't like to condone that, but, you know, and unless you're looking forward to living in the suburbs, I mean, if that's appealing externally, then that's great. But if the only reason you're moving is because of the stuff, I would reassess the stuff and see what really needs to be there.
So this issue of things constantly coming in and no place for them to go, or no process that comes naturally to a person for constantly removing, it is a big consumer culture is arguably the culprit there. I mean, why do we have so much stuff? It's not just because we hang on to things. It's also maybe partly because we get rid of so much stuff. I mean, if we didn't buy new socks all the time and mended our socks, we wouldn't have this occasional issue of being like, why do I have so many single socks with holes in them that I can't use and no one wants them, so I'm not going to give them away and I feel wasteful getting rid of them, so I'm just going to have a pile of socks that goes on forever. This is, I blame society.
Mm-hmm. Well, okay, so the upside of consumer culture is that you can donate all those socks, and actually places like Savers will take single socks because they just recycle.
With holes.
They'll recycle the fabric. They won't put it on the floor to sell. So once in a while, our consumer culture actually gives us permission to just donate the old socks and go buy new pairs, which actually is nice because it prevents the clutter. You've got the old ones out. So thank you once in a while to consumer culture that you can replace things when you need to.
Eliza, hang on with me through the break, okay?
Sure.
And we will also still be here with Mary Traylor, a costume designer. I'm Gina Kaufman. We'll be right back to this conversation about clutter, and you have just a little time left to tell us about that totally random object you could not get rid of, how you either found a way to part with it or make peace with its place in your life, even if it's stopping you from living where you want to, maybe. 816-235-2888. I'm Gina Kaufman. You're listening to KCUR Central Standard, where we are having something of a minimalist versus stuff lovers showdown, although we're all getting along. And our main guests here today are Eliza Cantley. She's got a business called Simple Kana. She's a professional organizer. And Mary Traylor, who is the costume designer at the Lyric Opera. And she has a lot of stuff that stimulates her and gives her ideas and sparks creativity and that she just is happy being around. Welcome back to both of you.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks.
We're going to talk now with some more of our callers. We've got Matt with us in Mission, Kansas. Hi, Matt.
Hi, how are you today?
Good, how are you?
Wonderful.
What can you tell us about?
Well, I actually have kind of a niche collection. I collect old tobacco pipes, and it's kind of become a little bit of an obsession for me. So on my free time, I spend a lot of time at antique stores looking for them, or estate sales, that sort of thing. But I've found that if I let my collection run wild, I'll end up with way too many and it becomes just clutter. So I've actually taken to restoring them and selling them. So I still get that fun feeling of finding something new, but I'm able to get them out there for other people that collect them, and that way I can kind of keep my collection to a minimum.
This sounds like a very good compromise, Matt. Is it working for you, or do you still feel like, but I want it?
Well, it's actually come down to I've figured out what I like for my own collection, but I also realized what other people like. So if I see stuff that other people like, I'll typically pick it up, I'll get that same feeling of satisfaction from finding something cool and unique and getting a good deal on it. But I'm able to turn around and sell it, and it's turned into my hobby of collecting actually pays for itself now. So it has no effect on our personal finances at home.
Thank you, Matt. Thanks for that call.
Absolutely.
Sounds like, yeah, that is that maybe the joy of interacting with stuff does not have to mean owning this stuff.
Yeah, I think Matt has discovered the important difference of hunting versus having, and he recognizes that the thrill of the hunt of finding these pipes is a lot of, and probably most of the excitement for him. And then he's able to restore it, which probably brings him joy too, and then to pass it on to someone who's appreciative. So I think this is a slam dunk for you, Matt.
Do you, Mary, as an artist yourself, you must, are there things that you are stimulated by in your own environment and want to hang on to, and then things that you just need to get your hands on but don't need to hold on to?
Well, absolutely. Absolutely. I prowl museums and antique stores and places like that where there's more stuff, lots more stuff. And the random nature of many of these collections is really helpful in stimulating creativity.
Can you explain that?
Well, I one time was an artist in residence with children, and I was in two absolutely different milieus. One was a very upscale, minimalist environment. The other one was the very, I hesitate to use it, the ghetto. And in terms of the creativity that I was able to draw out of these children, the kids who were surrounded by random stuff and even trash were incredibly inventive visually and verbally as well.
Wow.
And then on the other hand, the other children who kind of were deprived of an eclectic environment.
It's interesting that you use the word deprived. That's just culturally, it's a different way of thinking about it than how a lot of people talk about
it. Yeah, because
that.
A lot of people say, oh, you know, you're in this environment. Well, they churned out lovely things, but they were not creative.
They were deprived of random stuff.
Yeah. And, you know, like we made costume vests, and one of them were just duplicating things they saw at the mall. And the other kids were pulling together things out of leaves and trees and bottle caps and random pieces of clothing that was here and there. So they visually and intellectually, I think, really, really benefited from their, as I said, eclectic environment. Whereas the other kids weren't stimulated visually and to a certain extent intellectually.
Wow. Let's talk to Georgiana in Olathe. Hi, Georgiana.
Hi, good morning, and good morning to you. I have a slightly different spin on the conversation in that I am not a minimalist. I do accumulate. In fact, my children bring this to my attention. But my thought is I want to choose my own collection of stuff. Now, I then start referring to it as tchotchke, which is a Polish term for a lot of stuff. But in the meantime, I have now discussed with my children and grandchildren and loved ones my desire that let me collect my own, because in the end, they...
As opposed to what? Were people giving you stuff?
Yes, exactly. Exactly. Yes, but I am not totally turning them off by any means, because my caveat is that I direct them, because invariably they will say, I don't know what to get you, Mom. What am I going to get you? So I have now eliminated that problem by giving them the directive that for any of these occasions, they could give me something to smoke because I enjoy a good cigar occasionally. something to eat. I get great steaks. Or drink superb wines that they would not otherwise buy, a $25, $30 bottle of wine. But I get it. So it's wonderful. Or the last one, rub on my body. So therefore, I can...
You want a massage.
Yes, or any kind of moisturizers or exfoliants or anything like
that. I gotcha. Okay.
So in other words, I want to collect my own accumulation of things that, to me, I see I could use. And so
what I think is interesting about this is that it seems like gift giving is coming up in a different kind of way here, and it's that maybe... regardless of what relationship another person has with stuff, maybe Georgiana's right. Maybe that should be up to them and not, and that we could all probably think more about experiences or, other things. But I'm curious about your take, Mary.
Well, I think Georgiana's got the right idea there because she's accumulating a history of herself. And that's one thing that when you start decluttering, a lot of times we have lost contact with our own histories and our family's histories. And it sounds like she's going to have a pretty good history of herself that she has put together. And her children may or may not understand it or enjoy it, but she has had a wonderful time putting it together.
And she doesn't want to have to be editing.
Right. She's editing herself.
What about the idea of it? It sounds like she's having a stuff-related advance directive about how she wants these occasions handled, like holidays and birthdays, sort of the way some people plan for if they should be in a dire medical crisis, you know?
I think what occurred to me while Georgiana was talking is Georgiana has fantastic boundaries. And I think oftentimes people have clutter issues because we don't put up those boundaries of like, hey, you know what? I don't need more of that stuff. She's doing a fabulous job and she's surrounding herself with things that she's curated from her own home, like Mary said.
So it sounds like you think clutter, I keep getting the idea that your idea of what clutter is has very little to do with stuff, that it's more of
how it makes
a symptom.
Feel. Yeah.
Can you talk about that?
That too. So clutter being a symptom, I mean, my own definition of clutter that I've come up with for my company is that clutter is a material clue that something needs to be emotionally released. And so when we have poor boundaries, like I was talking about, if we have, strained relationships with our families, with our friends, then that can show in the stuff that we own. I don't know if I'm getting off topic
too much,
but I feel like it's relevant.
Yeah. I want to really, really quickly turn to Liz in Prairie Village just to end with an idea, because I don't know what Liz's idea is, but I know she has one. Hi, cool. Liz.
Hi. I just had to let you know something that hung around my hall closet for a couple of decades. When my mom and my aunt passed away, I got a mink stole and one of those funky fox things that women used to wear around their necks.
Yeah.
With the fox heads on.
Not everyday
totally
fashion these
stuff.
Days.
Yeah, no, and nothing I wanted. So it just sat there because I couldn't figure out what to do with it. My husband got online and found this wildlife reserve in Idaho who wanted them because they use them for little animals that they've saved to cuddle up to.
Oh, my God. That's so adorable. Liz.
And they had just found they had just saved a little bear, and my furs were going to snuggle up with this little bear, and we got them in the... We packaged them up and sent them out there the very day.
Thank you so much.
I need the name of this organization.
That is amazing. Our producer will grab that name from Liz. And Liz, thank you so much. That's ending our show with a little animal awe. Eliza Cantley, professional organizer with Simplicana, thank you.
Thank you so much.
And Mary Traylor, costume designer, thank you.
Thank you.
You can listen back to this conversation at kcur.org/centralstandard, and you can keep telling us about the random stuff you could or could not get rid of. This show is produced by Matthew Long Middleton, Sylvia Maria Gross, Jen Chen, Coy Duggar, and Suzanne Hogan, with help from intern Tom Taylor. I'm Gina Kaufman, and Up to Date is next. Stick around.